Well, we've been rehearsing all day, and around about 10:30, we just popped round to the captain's cabin for a minute or two.
A
minute or two, close. And when we came back, our scripts had been taken from our little room.
Yeah, it's just next to the toilet, and it's just round about. I don't know if you've been there.
It's the old actor's nightmare, like finding yourself in the high street with no clothes on.
Yes, okay. Very funny. Very funny. Good joke, but can we have our scripts back now, please?
No, really, come on.
No, whoever's responsible, we're gonna turn the lights out for 5 seconds, okay? And whoever is responsible for this can return the script on stage, and there'll be no headmaster study, nothing like that. Yeah.
No, look, we're trying to treat you like responsible adults, and you're making it very difficult for us.
Okay, right, hands on your heads. Everyone, I mean everyone, that means you, your hands on your heads. Okay, he's doing it. Come on.
Look, there's no need for that. I mean, after all, we've been picked to be in this live show because of our ability to,
think quick.
Right, yes, be, well, sort of...
Spontaneous.
Yes.
That's right.
Fine, so, Clive, why don't you do your very funny stand-up comedy routine?
What?
Yeah, go on, Clive.
Well, what are you talking about?
Clive's got this really funny stand-up act, he does.
No,
you were being very funny in the pub, Clive. All those jokes about me being small and fat. Hilarious. So now's your big chance to do the act.
Go on.
Ladies and gentlemen, Clive Mantle, the stand-up comedian.
Here goes. Funny thing happened to me on the way here tonight. This is absolutely true. Thanks. I left my flat, went to the tube station, bought a ticket. And if that wasn't enough, I got on the tube. Got off the tube. Laugh if you like. Walked up the road, and here I am. Why does it always happen to me, eh? Right. Few jokes. My mother-in-law so fat. Not a great joke. But yes, here's one. I went to a very small town and it was shut. My father-in-law's a midget. Another one. My mother-in-law so fat, she has to wear big clothes. Funny thing happened to me yesterday morning, which was nice. quite amusing. Now, yeah, this is it. Yeah. My mother-in-law so fat, she takes up all my jokes. I went to the baker's this morning, and it was shut. my baker is so fat, people mistake it for my mother-in-law. My mother-in-law so fat, and my father-in-law so small, that people always ask if their son-in-law's a stand-up comic. It's a good one to go out on, eh? My mother-in-law was so fat, she was shut. And a funny thing had to my father-in-law the midget on the way here. And that is a true story, yeah. Thank you. I didn't get any love.
Cheer up, Clive, you know. Whenever this whole world starts to get me down, and my future is looking unsure, I think of those worse off than me, and then I realize there's so much that I should be thankful for. And I thank God that I'm not Ronnie Carroll, Simon D, Peter Talk, or Huey Green. And despite that I might never make it, I thank God that I'm not a has-been like Chris Trace, Paper Lace, Vince Hill, and Judy Kahn, Johnny Spate, Charlie Drake, Peter Wingard, and Mike Sahn, Peter West, Georgie Best, and Shirley Abbey Kerr, Gary Glitter, Wally Whiten, and the entire cast of Hair, Hope and Keane, Ray Martin, Mark Cotts, George Lazenby, Joe, South, Jonathan, Ralph, Bert, Whedon, Leafy Lee, Jackie, Palo, Erica Rowe, Dickie Henderson, Monica Rose, David Frost and Julie Felix, and the Roger Whittaker shows. When you hear people say, she was good in her day, or, oh yes, I used to go for him, just thank God that you're not an old has-been, not like Esther and Abby Oferim, or Susan Morn, Frankie Vaughan, Jess Yates and Peter Noon, Pam Ayers, Laker Shares, Mac and Katie Kassoon, Reg Varney, Tari Carly, Kenny Lynch, Dave Cash, Russ Conway, Long John Baldry, and Crosby, Stills and Nash. Peter Took, Barry Took, the Peter Gordino set, Johnny Ray, Bobby J, and Reginald Bosanquet, Richard Dunn, Muriel Young, and Paul and Barry Ryan, Jet Harris, Tony Jacklin, Tetley Hall, and Lenny the Lion.
Right. Well, thank you. Thank you, Steve. It's very good to do that impromptu. Well, luckily we found our scripts, Nick, didn't we? Nick had them all the time, didn't you, Nick? He just wanted to play a pretend trick on Clive. Yeah, and we're very pleased to be with you this evening, and I'm particularly pleased because, quite frankly, on Friday night, I really didn't think I was going to make it. And I had a raging temperature and a sore throat, and the doctor said, Helen, phone them up and tell them you've got flu and you can't do the show. And I said, no, the show must go on. So I got out of bed, took half a dozen aspirins, and I came here to be with you tonight. Thank you. Thank you. Anyway, on with the show. No, it's right, I'll make it. So let's go over to Clive, who's got a few funny observations on this week's news. Clive.
What?
Clive, I believe you've got a few funny observations on this week's news.
Oh, I'm sorry. I must have blacked out for a minute.
Blacked out?
Yeah, I fell off a horse this morning and I landed on my head.
Oh.
I've had these occasional blackouts ever since.
But you're all right now. You're all right now, Clive.
Sorry. Oh, God, I must have blacked out again. Look, it'll probably happen a few times tonight, but I feel that I had to come in and do the show as I promised because, well, the show must go on.
Yeah, right. Okay. Well, Nick, I believe you've probably got, something to,
No, it's all right. It's all right. I'm fine.
Good.
It'll take more than advanced tuberculosis and double pneumonia to get me away from doing the show.
I see. It's just the old advanced tuberculosis and double pneumonia you're suffering from, is it?
No. I've got a headache as well.
Oh, right. But in spite of that, you've come in tonight because you knew the show has to go on. Is that right?
That's right.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Right, well, it's certainly put a little common or garden flu in its place. Well, we'll all take a short break to build up our strength. Thank you, Nick. Here's a little number on the piano from Steve.
Despite losing my hand in the Moulinex this morning...
Right, that's enough, Steve. That's enough, Steve. Just pull your hand out of your shirt sleeve and shut up.
At last, the hard work has been taken out of being a scientist. Now I can say goodbye to all my old equipment. Because now I have this. Robo-scientist. With robo-scientist, my work is cut in half. Or even smaller bits, if I like. Whole rabbits chopped for perfect samples in 3 seconds. Cats sliced for the microscope in under 2 seconds. And rats sliced for the fun of it in almost no time at all. Robo-scientist with a choice of blades in 3 sizes. Gerbil, monkey, or cow. Yes, with robo-scientist, blending is so easy. And genetic engineering was never so much fun. Or so tasty. Robo-scientist, if you had half a mind, you'd buy one.
Do you realise that the people of this country are being kept in the dark about what is really happening in the miners' dispute? I mean to say, Are there 3 months, 6 months, or 9 months' supplies left the flying pickets?
Dear Mr. Scargill, I'm doing a project on the coal mining regions of Great Britain, and the trouble is I can't seem to find any. I expect that's got something to do with that funny old chap, Mr. McGregor. By the way, is that the same Mr. McGregor who tried to eat up all the flopsy banners for dinner? Why has he started to eat miners now? Daddy says you aren't talking to him. I once didn't talk to my brother for 3 days and 4 hours, but I do think 11 weeks is rather unnecessary. You try putting your head under the pillow and holding your breath until he says sorry. That doesn't work. You put his head under the pillow and sit on it until he says sorry. Daddy says you probably thought of that already. Mummy says that you better sort it out all before this winter. This winter, as I said, I emphasize that twice, but thanks. Or else we'll have to buy our coal from Sotheby's. Well, we buy everything else from Sotheby's, so I don't see why it matters. My brother calls him a real dickhead, Mr. McGregor, that is. Is that short for Richard Head? I thought it was called Ian. Anyway, I don't think he should set the police on the flying pickets just because they breached the peace. I heard them on Top of the Pops and I thought they sounded rather groovy. Anyway, please tell him not to close down the pits. We'll all have to do our projects on arable farming in Wales. Again, yours faithfully, HL. Yes, we get all our coal from the bunker in the yard, which seems a lot simpler than going down a hole and getting all dirty. Have you thought of that?
Helen. What? Helen, are you all right?
What do you
mean? Well, it's just your neck. It's,
Yeah, all right, I know.
Is that pus?
No.
What is it, then?
Germline.
Oh, I see, you've got a spot.
Yes.
Ah. You still get them, then?
Well, obviously, yes.
You've been squeezing it, haven't you?
No.
It's all red.
Well, yeah.
I thought so.
You want to slice it off?
What?
Slice it off with a razor.
Oh, shut up, William.
Now, you reckon that's the best way to use it?
Oh, yes. Yes, definitely, yeah. It's the way I do it. Look, you see this one on my back?
Yeah.
Now, all you do is get the razor and... Oh.
Is there normally that much blood?
Yes.
You sure you haven't hit an artery?
It's feeling a bit weak, actually.
What's going on?
Oh,
what's all this mess?
It's just a spot, you know.
I feel sick.
No, there's blood everywhere.
Oh, I normally do it in a hot bath.
That's suicide. You don't get rid of spots like that.
No?
I feel really sick.
No, there's a much easier method. Look, see this one?
Blimey, Clive.
That's not a spot, that's a butter.
Well, see, look, watch, look.
Yeah?
Now, I'll strap this pre-moulded polystyrene hammock under my chin,
mm-hmm.
which is attached to this steel bar. Now, this runs down my back to another strap welded to a high-tension spring which runs between my legs and fastens to a 200-pound mallet mounted on this cast-iron pivot sewn into the tail of my shirt. Pass us the mallet, will you?
You must be joking. I can't even lift it.
Oh, give him a hand, will you, Helen? I daren't move once I've got this crutch harness on.
Okay, you sure this is going to work?
Well, I hope so. Right, now make me laugh.
Why?
You'll kill yourself.
No. I won't feel a thing so long as I'm laughing. Come on. Please?
Oh, all right. Helen, can you hand me that feather, please?
Oh, this one?
Yeah, that'll do. Right, now. The goons, eh? Right, so just hold out your arms, Clive. I got...
Mm-hmm.
I feel really stupid here.
No, please.
Are you all right?
Clive?
You've
gone all white.
Yes, but has the spot gone?
Hang on, I'll take a look. No.
I knew I should have given it another couple of days.
The Wonderful World of Disney.
Well, today's story, kids, is the true story of little Frank Finnegan, his best mate Jimmy Gunn, and a whole plane load of other kids going off to summer camp down in the leafy Everglades of Florida. Well, there they are. There's Frank and Jimmy and a whole shooting gallery of kids waiting, sitting on the tarmac. Best get on the plane, kids, before it takes off. Hey, but who's this? Who's this scuttling across the runway? It's our old friend, Sammy the Skunk. Hold your noses, kids. Well, old Sammy, he needs a holiday just like anybody else. So he's headed straight for that hole.
Stop that skunk.
Oh, I wouldn't try. I wouldn't try and chase him with your heart condition, Jake.
Oh.
Oh, dear. And there goes Jake, the old runway supervisor. I reckon says he'll be seeing the rest of his days out through the windows of an oxygen tent. Poor old Jake. And Sammy, well, Sammy's made himself at home as snug as a bug in a rug, right under that there captain's chair. And there he goes! Oh, look at that big white bird up there in the sky. Just as soon as he's out the way, the plane can take off. That there's Albie, the albatross, and he's been making a plain nuisance of himself ever since they built this airport back in 45, just after they dropped that big silver egg on our old friend, the Nips. I sure woke them up, but that's another story, kids. So there's the plane taking off. There it goes. Wee, 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 wee. Wave goodbye to that old plane, kids. As it goes up, way up into the wide blue yonder. Just look at that stunning Walt Disney photography, kids. That must have cost a buck or two. And talking of bucks, there's our old friend Billy the Buck Rabbit down there in his warren. But he's not looking at the plane. No, right now he's working on getting himself a little family. Just look at him go. Hey, look at those... Hey, well, there ain't nothing wrong with that, kids. That's just nature. You'll be doing it yourselves in a few years' time. But not with rabbits, I hope.
You, what a stink!
Oh, dear. It looks like old Sammy hasn't been on his best behavior. And blow me, I wouldn't be surprised if that smell wasn't enough to distract the captain's attention, so he accidentally turns the plane around 180 degrees and heads off in the opposite direction towards the wastelands of Alaska. That's where all those planes come down in them disaster movies, kids. But as luck would have it, that old plane comes down flat on its belly on a cushion of soft white snow. Just off the record, kids, I hear how some folks they call cocaine snow. But I don't suggest you sniff this stuff. You'd freeze your nostrils off. But who's this? It's none other than our old friend Pedro the Polar Bear. Now, you might just think that Pedro's a funny name for a polar bear, but it don't worry him none, because he don't know he's got a name at all. And if he did have, he'd probably prefer Peter. But his name's Pedro. Anyway, old Pedro, he wants to play with the kids as well, and sure enough he does. And when he goes home, he gets a right ticking off from his mom, because she's told him she doesn't know how many times not to play with his food before he eats it. Well, that's about it, kids, except to tell you about old Sammy the Skunk. Remember him? Now, you'll be pleased to hear that Sammy didn't get eaten at all. Nope, he got crushed to death underneath the captain's seat. So it looks like old Jake died for nothing.
The Wonderful World of Disney.
So, see you next week, kids, when we'll be seeing how Percy the Penguin copes with an Australian bushfire. Bye for now.
What have you got there, Clive?
It's the Diaries of Che Guevara.
Oh, yeah. Let's have a look at them, then. Tuesday, got up, got dressed, brushed teeth, tried to overthrow military junta in Bolivia. Wednesday, leaked for hairdresser's appointment, went to photographers to get shots for poster done, had to negotiate T-shirt franchise. At 3 o'clock, tried to overthrow military junta in Bolivia, failed again. Must remember to try again next... These are never Che Guevara's diaries, Clive.
Yes, I am.
Listen to this. Thursday, opened new boutique on King's Road. Left headscarf on bus. 1:30, had lunch with Andrew Lloyd Webber. These are forgeries, Clive.
No, they're not.
Yes, they are, Clive.
No, I happen to know they're not, for a fact.
Oh, come on.
Look, he was there signing copies of the book at the auction.
Yeah, I like that Tracy Ullman single. Yeah. My guy's mad at me. I left him for a millionaire.
Oh, 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 you know, fine. Shouldn't have done it. I'm really worried about going out live, Clive.
Why? Why?
Well, look, people, things like that for a start.
The other thing is, people know I'm not at home between 11:30 and midnight.
No, but you're here from 2:30 in the afternoon.
Thanks, Clive. You've just given the robbers another 9 hours. That's... Thanks.
Well, is Balham a bad area for burglaries, is it?
Clive, are you sponsored?
What?
You just told them where I live now.
Yeah, but I never mentioned Dinsmore Road.
Thanks, pal.
What now?
At least you didn't mention the postcode.
I don't know the postcode. Oh, I see what you mean.
Yeah,
but I didn't say anything about the loose stone in the front wall, did I?
Loose stone?
Yeah, where you hide your spare keys.
Spare keys?
Yeah, these.
Hang on. Where did you get those trousers from, Clyde? They're mine.
No, they're not.
Those are the trousers. Those are the trousers from my best dress suit.
No. These are shorts.
Clive. There's nothing like visual comedy. Clive. What else have you stolen from me?
Oh, hi, Nick.
Oh, hi, Helen.
Here's the money I owe you.
Hang on, that's my money. What's going on?
Who's that next to you, Nick?
Oh, I don't know. Ignore him. Hey, what are you doing after the show, Helen?
Oh, I don't know.
I'm thinking of having an impromptu party.
Dinsmore Road?
Yeah, well, there's plenty of booze.
Hang on, this is my booze. I'm Nick. This is awful. What was happening? Has it all gone too far? Clive had assumed my character. He'd taken over everything I owned. My whole life. But there was one thing that Clive could not possibly know. A secret so horrendous that every time I mentioned it, my voice changed. For unbeknown to Clive and the beautiful, vulnerable Helen, at the stroke of 8:30 to midnight, I became the most pitiful of all bestial creatures, a werewolf, a very big, hairy werewolf. Ow!
Yeah, all right, Nick. Nick, that's enough of that.
No, well, it's too late now.
Nick, here's your keys. I was only joking.
No, Clyde, this time you've gone too far.
I've gone too far. Nick, here's your trousers.
I don't wear trousers after 8:30 to midnight. I'd look silly as a werewolf in trousers. Besides, I'd never get the hairs off.
Have you tried Sellotape?
What?
Wait, you just wrap it around your hand, sticky side up, and then the hairs just come off.
Oh, you've ruined it now. I was just getting into that. You've really ruined it. That was suspension of disbelief.
Excuse me, Nick, but I too no longer have need of your trousers.
Clyde, that's it. Forget it. Heaven's burning.
No more.
It's just not believable. I'd never leave my keys behind a loose stone in the front wall.
No, I suppose not. And we wouldn't really give away your address on the air.
No. Just think what would happen.
Yeah, 300 people searching under the dustbin outside 312 Parkview Road, SW129NZ, nearest Tube Clapham South.
Yeah, and if you didn't quite catch that, we'll be repeating the address at the end of the programme, so have your pencils and paper ready.
Hello, Nick,
you got a new single out.
That's one I made two years ago. So why do you want to re-release it?
Same reason I'll say everything twice.
Hello, the record's stuck.
No, it isn't. How many times I got to tell you?
Have you thought about putting some jokes in?
No. Hello, the record's stuck again. No, it really has done this time. Only joking.
Hello, Nick, you got any single out?
Are you deaf as well as stupid?
Well, there's no need to be offensive.
But that's how I make my living.
So what are you going to put on the B-side?
I'll tell you what, I'll give you two guesses.
Hello, Nick, you got any single out?
Oh, so you've already heard the B-side.
Hello, Nick, you got any...
Did you read this week about the growing drugs problems in our prisons? I'll tell you what I think. It's just another form of escapism.
Clive! Clive, what are you doing?
What?
What are you doing?
Nothing.
Clive, stop it.
I'm not doing anything.
Just stop it.
Oh, sorry. Can't I just finish it?
No. Right, now sit down.
Yeah, but... just what's this thing?
Clive, never mind that. Just sit down.
No, no, no. What is it? Look, it goes all the way around here. Look, it stopped here.
Clive, would you just sit down?
No, no, look. It goes all the way under the carpet.
Clive, sit down. Don't pull that leaf.
Sorry.
Past the cottages as the carriage pulled up to the gates of Gwent Lodge, Emma felt at once feverish and matriarchal. Don't worry about father, Simon procrastinated indeed, his words sprinkling like so much confetti over the Aegean in May. But I'm so dreadfully upset by the whole affair, ruminated Emma, and as she spoke, she painted a small menagerie of brittle memorabilia in her mind's eye. Never had she graciously sanctioned such dispersals. Dispersals. Simon, Emma sighed. Far away, they could hear the river chuckling and gurgling like the bubbling of tiny snorkelers. The restless horses philandered to and fro with an inexpugnable whinnying, sounding like chocolate splashing in the moat. Simon, how on earth shall this be reckoned to Jack? And as she spoke, a faint sliver of anchovy trembled and glistened on her lip, and then suddenly vanished. Oh, he doesn't really know us, interjected Horace, the ugly cab driver, in his typically gruff, unpleasant working-class tones. But is a far all head there, perhaps he panyaheg. Oh, how silly and how quaint, she percolated. But please, leave me alone now. Simon felt his blood rising, and like the Fijian who summoned Hellespont to Jaxia, racked his hackles in a trice, and put himself between Emma's dull recollections and certain disaster. We shall have to speak to Bunthorpe about this, he cracked.
That was Book at Bedtime with Jane Bantwig reading an extract from Jane Austen's novel Jane Eyre. Or was it Jane Austen by Jane Eyre?
It was Emily Bronte, wasn't it?
No, she wrote Jane Mansfield.
Don't you mean George Eliot?
That wasn't his real name, you know. He was George Orwell in real life.
No, it was Eliot Gould.
No, he was a boy me too.
Clive, you do it. You get a good laugh.
Oh, that was In One Ear with Steve Brown, Helen Ledra, Clive Mantle and Nick Wilton. Music by Steve Brown. Written by Arnold Brown, Murray Hunter, John Doherty, Helen Murray, Jeffrey Perkins, Vicky Pyle, Nigel Planer, Roger Planer, Nick Wilton and the producer, Jamie Ricks. I didn't get a single laugh. What's going on, you bunter?
Clive, where are you going, Clive? What are you doing?
I'm fed up. I'm going home.
You can't do that. We haven't finished the show yet. It's a live show.
I don't care. I'm going home.
Why?
You go.
Why are you standing over there, Clive?
I'm waiting for a taxi.
Clive, you're in the middle of the Paris studio. You're not going to get a taxi here.
Taxi!
He thinks he's in the middle of the Paris studio. Clive!
Where do you want to go?
Clapham High Street.
Sorry, mate, not going any further than Knightsbridge.
There you are. I told you you wouldn't get one.